I want to thank Christian Ross for this slide and this kind of image that you'll see, this reconnect slide, because the concept came as him and I were texting back and forth. The concept came from this. We begin to think about the number of neighbors, of networks that you have, and how many dots are out there that we haven't connected yet. And as he was creating along these lines, I sent him a picture of a book that I'm reading from an 18th century theologian, Soren Kierkegaard. And this is the quote that I was reading as he was sending me this image. If there are only two people, the other person is the neighbor. And if there are millions of people, every one of those is your neighbor. And not only that, as he was saying that, Kierkegaard goes on to say this. It is, in fact, Christian love which discovers and knows that one's neighbor exists and that it is one and the same thing. Everyone is one's neighbor. Everyone is one's neighbor, is what Kierkegaard says. The love of Christ, which dwells in us, begins to discover in the world. The neighbor is everywhere. Did you get that? The neighbor is everywhere. I want you to hold on to that phrase for the next few weeks. The neighbor is everywhere. And when I say that, all of us who are good congregation members nod our head in affirmation to that statement. Yes, Russell, the neighbor is everywhere. But, and there's always a but when it comes to when we talk about neighbors, it doesn't take long for that nod of affirmation to change to the shaking of disapproval. Newsreels, and yes, I said newsreels, internet sites, social media posts cause something to happen inside of us, whether we know it or not. For some reason, there are certain neighbors which cause an emotional response from us that cause a stirring inside of us. Maybe it's fear, maybe it's disdain, maybe it's disgust, or maybe it's just the fact that we're oblivious to our neighbor. But what I want you to do for the next few weeks, for today, and next week, and then and the other week after that is, I want you to be attentive to your own thoughts. I want you to be attentive to your own reactions to when we talk about neighbor. What kind of people might you say no to? What type of people might you say, well, Russell, everyone but that person is my neighbor? What is it about that certain type of person where you would say that person is not my neighbor? Because as we start and go through this, this neighbor discussion is big for me. It has been massive for me. And in fact, I'm going to tell you a story here in a couple minutes of how I've been on this journey and why I've been on this journey. And as many theologians are asking, as we get into the story of the Good Samaritan, one of the questions is this: how far should love reach? How far should love reach? Is there a boundary to God's love? And if there is, who gets to decide the boundary? Do you get to decide the boundary? I mean, do you get to decide? Do I get to decide it? Do we as a congregation get to decide where the boundary is in regards to neighbor? And if we want to complicate things just a little bit more, when a neighbor discussion happens in the congregation, most of us know the churchy right answer. We know what we should say, but have you ever noticed that when we say the right churchy answer in here, the minute we leave the building and go out there with our family, everything changes? How we treat people changes. We actually find ways to skirt around the conversation. Or you may be thinking in your head right now, here we go again. We're going to be told we need to love our neighbor. Great, Russell. And I'm going to say right now with one answer, yes, you are. It's very simple. But I have a hunch, and this is just my hunch, but I have a hunch. The reason we move to rationalization of the neighbor is because what Jesus is calling us to in this text is hard and even offensive to many of us when we realize what Jesus is telling us. To acknowledge that we must. And when I say must is a big word here. We must love our neighbor means that our life, that our love is not just ours to hold on to and decide who gets it and who doesn't get it. The command to love your neighbor pushes us to go beyond, to see beyond, to live beyond what society tells us that we're supposed to see. You will love your neighbor is offensive to our senses because what Jesus is saying to us in this moment is that your neighbor is everywhere. Your neighbor is everywhere, so much so that when we begin to read the Good Samaritan passage, we'll notice something at the end of the passage. We'll notice that the lawyer who is talking to Jesus and asks the question, so who is my neighbor? At the end of the story, we'll not even be able to name the protagonist of the story. When Jesus says, so who showed mercy? You remember what the lawyer says? Who is your neighbor? The lawyer says, the one who showed mercy. The lawyer couldn't even say the Samaritan. The lawyer couldn't even get it out of his mouth, Samaritan. He couldn't even form the words to say Samaritan. And yet, Jesus finishes with this line, go and do likewise. Go and be like the neighbor in the story. Go and be the neighbor who is both Samaritan and victim. The neighbor sees, offers mercy, lends aid to the stranger. The stranger, in fact, is the neighbor. And so as we begin to get offended by our senses, as we realize what Jesus is actually calling us into, what we may try to do is when we read those two passages, in Matthew and Luke, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. That's the first one. But there's a second. Love your neighbor as yourself. What we might try to do is we might try to separate those two. Jesus puts them together. Do you notice that? In both passages. We might try to separate them. We might try to separate them and say, love of God is one thing and love of neighbor is another. And when we try to do this, what we're trying to do is we're trying to say that we can show love to who we want to show love to. We don't want to connect love of God with one and neighbor. We need them disconnected so that at least with love of neighbor, I can love all the people who I have preference to loving. And you know those people I'm talking about right now. You know, it's those people who you share likes with. It's those people who are in your kind of same socioeconomic way of living. It's those people who share the same beliefs as you. You know, I can love those neighbors. And if I can separate it from the love of God and just love neighbors yourself, then I can find those neighbors who I want to love. But, and there's a lot of that word, but in this story, but the love of God can't be separated from the love of neighbor. In fact, the love of God, it's almost as if Jesus is saying, the love of God produces something within us. The love of God that is rooted in us as we refocus our life back towards God. That the love of God produces a fruit in us. And that fruit is love of neighbor. It is the love of God which we live out of and in when we love the neighbor. The love of God is even more evident in our lives when we love the neighbor. Because people begin to notice something different. And it's only through the love of God that we can, in fact, love the neighbor and realize that the neighbor is everywhere. And so if this is true, that the neighbor is everywhere, that our identity is rooted and secured in the love of God, then fear, or that person that I told you to think about just a few minutes ago, that person that you would say no to, that no, that person is not my neighbor, then fear of that person transitions to faith in God. And not only that, that faith becomes trust that as we love the neighbor, God is at work in the moment. And so if that's the case, we can love our neighbor as ourselves. Then what Jesus is calling the lawyer to, what Jesus is calling us to, which may offend some of our sensibilities if we think about who Jesus is talking about, then we ask the same question as the lawyer does in Luke verse 29. Okay, so Jesus, if you really mean all this, if I can't tear the two apart, and if my love of God, of you, of every part of my being is just the first and beginning, and I have to love my neighbor, then who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor, Jesus? And that's the question we start with. Because the minute we hear, and who is my neighbor, we can't help but go to the passage of the Good Samaritan. The Samaritan which impinges on our life still today. Now, the hard part is for most of us in here, we've read the Good Samaritan so much, it's just become another cool Bible story. It's just become a story to us. It's just become kind of something that we talk about in Luke 10, and then we move past. But if we really dig into the Good Samaritan, we realize that it impinges upon our life in more ways than we would like to admit. Have we become like the lawyer, asking questions to justify our beliefs and our stances in the world? Are we hoping today that when we ask Jesus the same question, who is my neighbor, that Jesus may give us a different story, and this time it's a story that we'll like? And more importantly, as we read this text of the Good Samaritan, what I want is this question of why I feel, why I'm having these emotions when Jesus is calling me to love my neighbor. Because the story hasn't changed. And so today we're going to begin the journey into this story. We're going to begin the journey into this story to see how God is calling us to reconnect our lives with everybody we come in contact with. And this has been a journey for me, as I said a few minutes ago. And this journey started for me 7 years ago. And it's been the journey I've been on in my writing and in my thinking. And really, it kind of influences, the Good Samaritan kind of influences and becoming a foundational text of how I'm trying to live my life. But it started in a very interesting way. It started by my daughter, Anna Lee. Hi. Who was 6 years old at the time. My daughter, who was 6 years old at the time, noticed this man coming down the road. And when I say coming down the road, he wasn't really coming down the road. What he was doing was walking into the front doors of our church right here. It was a man who was down on his luck. He needed some help. A man I heard from the office asking for gas and a little bit of grocery money. I heard all this from me staying seated at my office chair. I heard him actually enough to walk out of my office, make sure Angela and them were okay. I was really big here. Y'all doing all right? Good. And then I walked back to my office. I heard enough of his story that I was like, okay, they'll get this figured out. I'm going to go back to work. But my daughter, Anna Lee, who was 6 at the time and hanging out in my office, heard something as well. She heard enough of a whisper of these people talking that she left my office while I was not looking to go see the man and what he was talking about. And being the good dad that I was and not noticing my daughter had flown the coop, a panic set in for just a couple of minutes. You know, parents, that moment that you just can't find, you know they're close. You just can't find them. They're just at that right size where everything covers them. I couldn't find her, and I knew she couldn't be far, but a panic set in. And so when I called out her name, I remember saying, Anna Lee, there was no response. So I immediately got up from my desk, and I walked out towards Angela's desk and towards the secretary desk right here when I heard the faint voice of a 6-year-old girl reading a story. And you know what I'm talking about. If you've had a child who's just learning to read, and they're reading a story, they're trying their best to read the story, and you hear that faint voice of Anna Lee reading a story. She was reading the story of Noah to someone. And so when I came around the corner, I actually saw who she was reading the story of Noah to. It was the man who was asking for money. There Anna Lee was, sitting right in here in the library, sitting at the table with this man, reading the story as best she could. And what did I do in the moment? Well, I did what any good dad would do. Instead of paying attention to the moment, I yelled at her and told her she needed to come back here to dad. My daughter, however, never being one to listen to me even today, finished the story with the man. She shut the book. The man looked at Anna Lee and said, I always remember these words, this man who I don't know. Thank you, Anna Lee. Knew her name. Thank you, Anna Lee. That was a great story. I then asked my daughter, why would you read to that man? You don't know who he is. And her response lives with me, haunts me, and walks with me to this day. Why wouldn't I read the story, Dad? He's my friend. In this moment, with these words from a 6-year-old girl, I learned something about myself and God. My daughter, whom I am well pleased, saved me on that day. When I thought that I was good at loving the neighbor, when I had created the image in my head that I am good at loving the neighbor, it was a 6-year-old girl who reminded me that I'm still justifying like the lawyer. And who is my neighbor, Lord? What I realized on that day is my love has preferences only for some. And so over the next few weeks, the parable of the Good Samaritan invites us and challenges us into a new way of seeing the neighbor. This seeing may be unwanted by many of you. And while we hear stats and we see news reports about the growing diversity in the world, it only becomes apparent when we notice our neighborhoods and our communities are changing. They don't look like how they used to be. There's new people moving in. They look different than me. They have different beliefs than I do. And so how do we handle all of this? How do we handle all of this growing change? How do we handle the growing change of ethnicity, the growing differences of religion? How do we grow into a community that once all looked the same but now looks different? Jesus gives us the Good Samaritan. And Jesus offers us a new way of living in a world, of seeing a world, and not being afraid of a world. But in fact, encourages us to engage the world, to engage our neighbor. And maybe with the voice of a 6-year-old girl can tell us, why wouldn't I read that story to them? They're my neighbor. So in the next few weeks, begin to think about, begin to look around, begin to notice your life and who's it encounter, who's it with. Do you notice yourself moving towards certain people but moving away from other people? Do you notice yourself in your head going, no to that person, but yes to this person? Because every day we are constantly asking and answering the question in our life, who is my neighbor? And then Jesus steps in and says, I have an answer that will not only save you, but has the power to save the world if you're willing to engage it. The Good Samaritan. Freshen up on it. Get used to it. Read it. Read it every day. Read it every week, because we're going to be reading it a lot in the next few weeks. And if you get tired of it, good. Because we'll read it one more week. But who is our neighbor? That's the question. If you have a need this morning, if you have prayers, if you have concerns, we'll have elders down front. We have members sitting next to you who are willing to listen and pray with you as well. But come now as we stand and as we sing.